Colin, tell us 150 stories under your business unusual belt.
Yes, and one of those companies that we've featured quite a few times, or more specifically one of its products, the smartphone, is Apple. Now the $1 trillion company that we can talk about. And I recall us talking about the various phones. Its most recent batch have just come out, including the impressively sized iPhone XS Max. And back when the iPad first came out, we figured out what does all this mean for trends? And we kind of figured, okay, the iPhones will get bigger and the iPads will get smaller. And they have just completed that. iPhone started off at 3.5 inches. The new 10X Max is 6.5 inches. The iPad started at 9.7 inches and has shrunk down with the iPad mini to 7.4. The family is complete. Apple is done. But there is one other element you can try it, and that's Siri has been getting better all along. The new iOS 12 is also out, and it includes the ability to make Siri South African. In fact, I've fiddled with your phone a bit for you to see what Siri sounds like as a male South African. Go ahead and ask Siri if he is a robot.
Hey Siri, are you a robot?
Stopping traffic isn't within my capabilities, if that's what you're asking.
Okay.
So, nerd.
So
finally, Siri wakes up and goes, "What's stopping traffic is not my."
His smart answer there seemed to reflect the fact that in South Africa we refer to robots as traffic lights, and he says he cannot change the traffic, but he is a robot of sorts. So back to those 150 editions.
Can I play my favorite Siri trick with you?
Oh yeah.
This is not the South African one. No, this isn't the South African. Hey Siri, what's the weather like in Pretoria tomorrow? Listen.
Nice weather coming up for Pretoria tomorrow.
Pretoria tomorrow. Hey, and she's always done that. And then you say to her, "Hey Siri, what's the weather like in Umhlanga tomorrow?"
Sorry, I can't get any information about Umhlanga.
See, so Siri is not a South African.
We have a way to go.
We could catch Siri out. But Pretoria is in South Africa. Umhlanga is not.
Yes, not yet. We nailed that one. So one of the first episodes, or the first episode, looked at Uber. And Uber back in 2015 when we first started, this was the company that was the shining example of disruption and innovation and gig economies. Everybody wanted to say it was the Uber of ... But since then, things certainly have changed. They've got resistance from regulators, from incumbents, competitors, even their customers threatening at one point, delete Uber. Their CEOs had to step down, and much of the press coverage now is as likely to be sort of negative as it is positive. And while the plan for the gig economy, this is the notion that, drivers aren't employees, they work for themselves, etc. At the time, we did sort of tweak a little bit to say we should rather refer to this as a smart economy, the ability for labor and people wanting to provide jobs to connect in a much smarter way would be better. That has kind of happened, albeit that there's still some big challenges to it. And I think it remains the most valuable private company. It reached well over $70 billion at one point. Right now, it's sort of hanging around the low $60 billion mark, which isn't bad. Its world dominance was challenged a bit in China. Rather than going head-to-head, it decided to withdraw and take a stake in the local Chinese competitor. It sold its stakes in Southeast Asia to the local one there, Grab, and it merged in Russia. So it's found a little bit of stability. It's sort of still very much the way you hail cabs, and I think we can say one of the successes, because it has absolutely changed the way people hail cabs, whether they'll be fancy Uber style or just your regular communal garden taxi that you would have flagged down in the past. Then the next one are the two real big ones, and we touched on these multiple times, Google and Facebook. And Google, 20 years old this month.
What?
Yes. So we touched on it when it was turning 19 last year.
They grow up so fast.
And it is. It's one of the old ones. I mean, 2 decades. Gosh, you think it's about ready to die. You were talking about the lifespan of companies. But Facebook, though, unrivaled for size. This has got more than 2 billion users, and there are really only 3.5 billion people currently on the internet. So half the world is on the internet, and more than 70% of them are using Facebook. So it's absolute behemoth. In terms of its revenue, between Google and Facebook, 20% of all advertising revenue goes to them. They have displaced print, TV, radio, anything else where you can put ads on, and it's all going to them. Twenty percent of all the spend, which really is quite impressive, and they've kind of dragged that all to online. But they too, all the significant changes. When we touched on them in February 2016, things were still looking good, even though right there at that very moment, all of those scandals about Cambridge Analytica scooping up data and using it for nefarious things, and campaigns trying to get people to click things or make them angry to click things to go and see ads, or potentially change the US election, change how Brexit could have been happening, and many other conflicts around the world spurned supposedly as a result of what people could do on Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg appearing in front of US and European regulators who ask very fairly, what is he going to do to fix it? And this is the rub. It's not easy for him to fix it. He built something ostensibly to give everybody, all of those 2 billion people, the chance to post and share anything they wanted. It wasn't supposed to be controlled the way a media channel was. He's resisted that definition. I think he's starting to realize that it's not possible, and they are now looking to increase the number of moderators that will be using the platform up to 20,000, while still relying on machines to try and sift through much of the stuff. In fact, they're up to 2 billion bits of content posted to the platform daily. So it's
Hold on 1 second. 2 billion bits of content every day.
Yeah, so that's from children's pictures through to horrific pictures and lots of propaganda. And they need to find a way to define what this is. And honestly, this is a fascinating subject, because in defining what is fair and not fair, one recent sort of campaign with activists was about breastfeeding. And they sort of got to the point where they said, okay, we know how to just ban nudity. And then breastfeeders said, no, there's nothing unnatural about this. What's wrong? And they had all sorts of challenges about saying, can we algorithmically identify nipples? And then, oh, male nipples are okay, but female nipples or not. And oh, it got really, really complicated, including one picture that had somebody breastfeeding a goat. And then they said, oh, hang on, this is really getting complicated now. And I agree with him. It's really complicated. If they manage to solve this, quite honestly, it might rival our ability to sort of combat bacterial infections with antibiotics. It's also that hard if they're going to try and do it. Google, too, $80 billion annual revenue. So, you know, that's not a problem, but it's all from advertising. And of course, Google, we sort of think is doing a lot more than that. The driverless cars, the massive cloud storage and mapping and all these other sort of services. But none of them really been able to add much to the revenues that they're doing still from search. And that's kind of a challenge for it. It's also got issues with how much itch was raising false news. I checked recently, there was some people having fun that when you Google idiot and do the image search, you get an inordinate number of pictures of the US president, which I'm not sure Google would specifically want to have it come out that way, but it does. And that potentially is a problem if you're the US president, certainly, and that's the one that it connects with. So those were the two that had sort of ups and downs, and they're kind of in the middle. And then driverless cars, and we've done a lot on this, and I suspect there's still a lot more to come, so we hardly can draw a line underneath it. But we went so far, the prediction in April 2017 was that anybody born before 2012 would not be allowed to drive a car once they turned 18. The cars would simply be more safer without us driving them than with us actually driving them. The reality is that we can make cars sort of 95% autonomous. And then that last 5% is proving very difficult. Most recently, they noticed that with things like snow, fog, the cars basically just stop because they can't see the road in snow. They can't see far enough in fog. And even heavy rain will make it sort of scratch its head. In fact, there was one that was done in Boston, electric vehicles. And apparently the seagulls there are pretty arrogant. And so they would just stand in the middle of the road and the car would drive up to them thinking, oh, I don't know what to do. And because they're silent, the seagulls weren't afraid, so it stopped. And so the whole experiment was put on hold because seagulls were snacking on bits of roadkill. But we'll see what happens over there, because besides those technical things to overcome, there's still the real other challenges that these cars are going to be connected on these fancy 5G networks. And that may see them getting hacked, remotely controlled, which is definitely not what we want. And even the bigger question, which doesn't get resolved by the technology guys, is the ethics of it. Should a car protect you from, you know, saving most lives, or simply save the driver? And sometimes if you had to know that your driverless car is going to drive you into a wall to save somebody else, it might make you think twice before buying it. But then there's the most interesting ones, the blowouts. And the two of them, I think you'll nod in agreement to say, yep, those were very big bombs. Theranos and Bitcoin would be the two, yep, I think we touched on, saying, hey, this is one to watch. and we watched it go terribly wrong. Theranos, for those who don't know, is a magic company. And this is the challenge with the hype cycle, the Gartner hype cycle we talked about. When there's more magic involved in the product than what we can perceive as humans, then the likelihood of this hype being created around the expectations of what it can deliver is likely to see it face a horrible, horrible death. And Theranos was a blood testing company that, unlike the other ones, would do a battery of tests in this tiny machine using only a pinprick of blood. So you wouldn't feel it. That, a lot of people said, we would love that ability. Unfortunately, it's only possible on, you know, Star Trek, basically. That's not a real world thing. And despite Elizabeth Holmes having become the youngest self-made female billionaire, her and her company is effectively ruined as of this year. There is no value left in it. There's still court cases, etc., to settle what happened there. And then Bitcoin. This is the crazy roller coaster. We touched on it first in January 2016. And it sort of saw the peak of its craziness in December 2017, touching on almost $20,000 a coin. HODLers, these are the ones who are so fanatical about the currency that they say, just keep it, just keep it, just keep it, still believe it'll come back, as it has fallen 75% from those highs to about $6,500. But if you happen to give it a go back when we first mentioned it in January 2016, you would still be up 1,500%, because it was only $395 when we first talked about it. Yeah. So still up if you
And I probably said terrible things about it then as well, didn't I?
You have been very consistent, Bruce. You thought it was rubbish then, and you've said so all along. And you probably are very well right. I think the currency part, you know, it just doesn't solve a big enough problem. That's kind of why it's not going anywhere. It uses a lot of energy. It's slow. It has volume problems. So it, I think, will probably become a useful thing, but not the thing that everybody was talking about. Blockchain, on the other hand, that could still be very useful as a logging function, open, transparent way of having assets or things that we need to be logged and kept and publicly visible. That would be very useful. There are many more, as I say, 150 episodes to go and have a look at. Includes things with Elon Musk and all of his crazy dips and dives, CEO Jeff Bezos and Amazon and how big they've gotten, and all these other companies that have managed to do some incredible things in their times. And I think the big takeaway from this is that I would have thought, wow, I'm kind of running out of business unusual, probably. Although while the big guys have sort of become business as usual, the notion that this disruption is a thing, that's the only thing that we can say is usual now. The unusual businesses are still all over the show.
I tell you what, go and have a holiday.
Ah, yes.
And rethink Business Unusual. And
deal.
We look forward to seeing you in 3 weeks.
Thanks.